Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's going on, fantasy managers? Welcome back to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and it's the weekend, so as always, I'll be taking over for Bubba as the host of this weekend edition of the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler, and you can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball-related from Friday, May 3rd. We'll start it off with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes, beginning with the bad news. Starting pitcher Steven Matz of the Cardinals was placed on the 15-day IL with a protruding disc in his back. Matz attempted to pitch through the back pain in his last start, during which he allowed four runs and couldn't escape the fourth frame. The southpaw will be reevaluated next week, but back injuries can be tricky, so Matz may be out for a few weeks. Kyle Leahy was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but it's still not clear who will take over for Matz in the Cardinals rotation. Outfielder Byron Buxton of the Twins was placed on the 10-day IL with right knee inflammation. Buxton underwent an MRI recently, and it revealed no structural damage, so President of Baseball Operations Derek Falvey expects a minimum stay for Buxton, but given his injury history, I'd expect him to be out for at least two full weeks. Willie Castro and Manuel Margot will see more time in center, while Austin Martin rejoins the roster in a utility capacity. Starting pitcher Nathan Eovaldi of the Rangers was placed on the 15-day IL with a strained right groin. Eovaldi will land on the IL for at least a couple weeks. Yeri Rodriguez was recalled from the minors, but it's unclear who the Rangers will turn to replace Eovaldi in the rotation. Jack Leiter and Owen White are candidates to be promoted to fill that role. And lastly, relief pitcher Brock Stewart of the Twins was placed on the 15-day IL with right shoulder tendonitis. Stewart, a secondary setup man in Minnesota with Yoan Duran back from the IL, will miss at least the next 2 weeks with the injury. Caleb Thielbar and Cole Sands will step up into larger roles in Stewart's absence. In terms of transactions, the Rays made a series of moves, optioning Nico Goodrum and Rene Pinto to the minors to make room for Alex Jackson and Johnny DeLuca on the big league roster. Despite their major league roster spot, they will have minor roles. Both will be on the weak sides of platoons, with Jackson sharing time behind the plate with Ben Rortvedt and DeLuca splitting time with Richie Palacios in the outfield. Catcher Yasmani Grandal was activated from the 10-day IL. The veteran backstop missed the first month of the season with plantar fasciitis. Grandal's return means 2021 number one pick Henry Davis is headed back to the minors. Davis struggled mightily with a 162 batting average, zero homers, a 35% strikeout rate, and a 48 WRC+, but hey, at least his defense behind the plate was solid. We got a little hyped during spring training when Davis was crushing massive home runs, but he struggled in his second taste of the major leagues. Hopefully he can get right in the minors and come back strong later this year. This isn't the last we will see of Davis, but if Joey Bart and Grandal can successfully hold down the catcher role for the time being, the Pirates will have the opportunity to wait for Davis to prove he's ready for the big leagues. Third baseman J.D. Davis of the A's was activated from the 10-day IL. He missed 2+ weeks with an adductor strain and will see everyday playing time at both infield corners for the A's. The team also recalled Brett Harris, their number 9 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline. Harris will fill a utility role, seeing most of his time at the hot corner versus southpaws. The club also optioned first baseman Ryan Noda and shortstop Nick Allen. Both hitters haven't lived up to expectations thus far, with WRC plus marks below 50. Tyler Nevin and Harris will see more time at first, while Daryl Hernaiz claims an everyday role in the 6-hole. In a surprising move, the Marlins traded second baseman Luis Arraez to the Padres. It's weird timing and sort of weird for both teams. I guess the Marlins are entering a rebuilding phase mid-season, while the Padres look to add yet another middle infielder. The Marlins received the Padres' number 6 prospect outfielder Dylan Head, their number 9 prospect outfielder Jacob Marcy, their number 13 prospect first baseman Nathan Martorella, and recent KBO transfer right-handed reliever Woo Suk Go. It's a decent haul for Arraez, who is set to become a free agent following the conclusion of the 2025 campaign. Arraez will see most of his time at DH, with all 4 infield spots accounted for by superior defenders in San Diego. This should improve his fantasy stock, though, as his surrounding cast in San Diego will be much more competent. Meanwhile, in Miami, Vidal Brujan is expected to take over at the Keystone position, though a corresponding move could shed light on their plans for the position going forward. Third baseman Addison Barger of the Blue Jays was optioned to the minors. One of the Jays' top prospects, Barger didn't perform while getting inconsistent playing time at third and in the outfield. This won't be the last we see of Barger, but for now, he is back in the minors. And lastly, second baseman Vaughn Grissom is back. He was activated from the 10-day IL by the Red Sox. Grissom missed the season's first month with a hamstring injury and an illness, and will be immediately slotted in at the Keystone position, with the Red Sox struggling to find their middle infield duo for the year with Trevor Story on the IL. In terms of news, starting pitcher Gerrit Cole is expected to throw off a mound today. This marks a big step in Cole's recovery, as it's the first time he's climbed a mound since the injury. Cole is eligible to return later this month, but is realistically looking at a mid-June return. Starting pitcher Nick Pivetta is expected to rejoin the big league club early next week. His first start is likely to come against the Braves, so you may want to find a way to keep him on your IL until his second start. And lastly, closing pitcher Paul Sewald and outfielder Alec Thomas of the Diamondbacks are expected to be activated from the IL early next week as well. Sewald may need to be eased into the closer role, while Thomas will be a welcomed addition to an outfield struggling to find consistency this year. And now we'll take a look at the notable performances from Friday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with Brett Beatty versus the Rays, as he did all he could, but the Mets still lost. He went 3-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 4 runs batted in. He's up to 3 home runs on the year now. His first one traveled 378 feet with a 109.2 mile per hour exit velocity, while the second one went 421 feet with a 107.7 mile per hour exit velocity. Now, in his third season in the majors, it's about time for the 24-year-old to break out. Beatty was absent at the plate in his first full season last year, posting a 68 WRC plus in 108 games. With a year and offseason of adjustments behind him, fantasy managers were hoping the post-hype prospect could put things together this year. With a 305 average through his first 17 games, it looked for a second like this might be the year Beatty proves his minor league production wasn't a fluke. Instead, Beatty batted just 152 through his next 13 games, dropping his WRC plus below 100 for the season through his first 30 games. The first multi-homer game of his career, though, pushed his season-long WRC plus north of 115, and the hope of Beatty's ascension has been reborn. The most notable change to Beatty's game thus far has been a 10% reduction in his strikeout rate, allowing him to make more contact and push for an improvement in the batting average department. Unfortunately, the trade-off has been worse batted ball metrics. Maybe this game was Beatty showcasing his ability to meld his minor league power prowess with his newfound contact ability. However, we'll need to see a little more from Beatty to buy into a potential 2024 breakout. Nolan Schanuel had a big game versus the Guardians as he helped the Angels to a win in Cleveland. Schanuel went 2-for-3 with 2 runs, a home run, an RBI, and a walk. It was his third home run of the year, and it traveled 378 feet with a 100 mile per hour exit velocity. Sean Uel has returned to the leadoff spot for the Angels across the last three games and is taking to the challenge with ease. His movement up the lineup would have been more celebrated had he not lost protection from Mike Trout when he hit the IL with a torn meniscus, though Sean Uel has already exhibited the improvements to his game we were hoping for in the offseason. After launching just one long ball last year, he's already up to three dingers on the year in two fewer games. Sean Uel has also been able to maintain his bat-to-ball skills while improving his batted ball quality and his home run output. The first baseman has the ability to hit 270 with 15 home runs and could be a decent contributor in the runs category atop the Angels order, but Sean Uel is a fringy option in 12 teamers, but I think he could be a solid play in 15 team leagues because he plays every day and is at the top of the lineup. And lastly, Brent Rooker helped the A's to a win versus the Marlins, going 1-for-3 with a run, a home run, and two runs batted in. It was his sixth home run of the year, and it was a bomb traveling 440 feet, the fourth furthest batted ball of the day, and it had a 108.3 mph exit velocity. Rooker is looking to repeat the success of his breakout All-Star 2023 campaign. He's proven to still possess the 30 home run power he flashed last year with six home runs already. However, his strikeout woes have gotten worse. Last year, he struck out over 30% of the time, and now Rooker is striking out north of 38% of the time, a mark he lowered from over 40% by avoiding being fanned on Friday. That strikeout rate is completely unsustainable and makes Rooker difficult to roster in anything shallower than an AL-only league. His batting average will sit dangerously close to 200 despite impressive batted ball metrics that will keep his chase for a second consecutive 30-homer campaign alive. On top of that, Rooker is in a terrible lineup in Oakland, providing him with few run-producing opportunities. If you're desperate for power, Rooker should be on your wire, but his detrimental performance in other areas drags down his fantasy viability significantly. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Friday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. And now we'll head to the mound and check out the notable starting pitching performances, opening with Cal Quantrill in Pittsburgh as he earned the win, tossing 7 2/3 scoreless innings. He allowed just 3 hits and walked nobody while striking out 9. Quantrill induced 9 whiffs with 34% CSW across 99 pitches, and Quantrill cooked with his sinker and splitter. The sinker took advantage of a passive Pittsburgh lineup, stealing 15 called strikes on its way to a 41% CSW. Meanwhile, the splitter was a whiff machine, inducing 6 whiffs while his curve chipped in 3 more. However, this is not a performance you should expect from Quantrill moving forward, and it was clearly just a good night for the righty. Quantrill is a Toby at his absolute best, touting sub 20% strikeout rates in each of the past 4 years. And despite his success with the Guardians in 2021 and 2022, that was all smoke and mirrors. Those days are long gone, and Quantrill is now in an even tougher situation, fighting both his skills and the thin air of Coors Field to execute against big league lineups. He was lucky to get a punchless and passive offense on the road on Friday, but Quantrill won't be as lucky next time as he has to face the Giants in Colorado. I don't even know what the circumstances would have to be for me to consider streaming Quantrill, but I'm definitely never taking the chance inside Coors. Hayden Wesneski had a big game versus the Brewers, but the Cubs lost. Wesneski took a no decision, tossing 6 1/3 scoreless innings, allowing just 3 hits and 2 walks while striking out 8 batters. He induced 9 whiffs with a 29% CSW across 90 pitches. And despite sitting a tick lower on everything, Wesneski carved up the Brewers. His signature sweeper led the way with 7 whiffs and 38% CSW, while his four-seamer did enough to help him get by with a scoreless outing. Wesneski now sports a 0.54 ERA through his first 16 2/3 innings pitched, and you're wondering if this is someone to get excited about. It's great to see his pitch count reach 90, allowing him to survive into the 7th frame, though I don't think Wesneski has a deep enough arsenal to consistently turn the lineup over 3 times. His four-seamer sweeper combo is lethal against right-handed hitters, however, he doesn't have the weapons to take down lefties all the time. Sweepers generally perform worse against lefties, and while Wesneski has great extension, his heater has terrible attributes in terms of induced vertical break and vertical approach angle, making it a pitch that can't be trusted as a primary offering. Wesneski's cutter is supposed to be his nullifier against opposite-handed hitters. The pitch has done a great job of avoiding loud contact thus far, and Wesneski has used it correctly, throwing it comfortably in the zone as a strike pitch. The cutter sports a 75th percentile PLV, but was thrown just 8 times on Friday, which is weird considering how much success he had. I'd love to see him incorporate that pitch more to give me more confidence in his ability to take down a lineup for 6 innings every time out. but Wisniewski may have a tough time navigating the Padres lineup in his next start, but it will be worth monitoring the success and usage of his cutter to determine if he's someone we should be adding in 12 teamers. I think Wisniewski is on the verge. We just need that cutter to come through so that we can actually trust him. And lastly, we have Chris Paddock versus the Red Sox as he earned a win for the Twins, tossing 6 shutout innings, allowing just 2 hits and a walk while striking out 6. He induced 12 whiffs with 34% CSW across 83 pitches, and Paddock took down the Red Sox with a new weapon on Friday. His slider, his third most featured pitch in his first 5 outings, was Paddock's most thrown pitch as he turned to it 35% of the time. The game plan made sense as he had a great feel for the pitch, inducing 5 whiffs and 38% CSW, while his fastball dominated at the top of the zone to the tune of 6 whiffs and 50% CSW. Those 2 pitches allowed for his curve and change to take a back seat, and this game actually gets me excited about Paddock. The righty has always needed a third pitch to be a starter we can trust. Paddock's fastball and changeup are great offerings, sporting PLVs inside the top 7% of the league, and he's always been tinkering with a curve, a slider, or a cutter for years, but has never been able to lock one down. If this was him locking down the slider and it's a pitch he can trust moving forward, he becomes a legit option in 15-teamers with 12-team viability down the line. Tune into Paddock's next outing against the Mariners to see if he can get us to start believing again with another showcase of a trustworthy third pitch. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Friday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily starting pitcher roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves, starting with the former. Jose Alvarado locked down his 6th save, and Alvarado hasn't been pitching at previous levels, but he's still been the preferred option in the 9th for the Phillies. With Mason Miller having pitched on consecutive days, 2 days prior to Friday's game, Lucas Urseg was called upon for the 9th and secured his 2nd save. Urseg will have a handful of save opportunities this year, with the A's monitoring Miller's innings closely. With Pete Fairbanks on the IL, Jason Adam notched his 2nd save for the Rays. Adam will be the Rays' go-to option until Fairbanks returns. Trevor Megill worked his way into the closer role for the Brewers, recording his 2nd save with a perfect 9th. Megill owns the best skills in the Milwaukee pen and could be beginning his transition into the 9th with Yoel Piamps moving into a high leverage role. After 4 days off due to injury, Craig Kimbrell looked great after blowing his last 2 save opportunities. The future Hall of Famer struck out the side on his way to his 8th save. With Justin Lawrence on the paternity list, the Rockies turned to Jalen Beeks in the 9th as he worked around a run to record his 1st save. Beeks will compete with Jake Bird and Nick Mears, or maybe the whole bullpen, for saves this weekend for the Rockies. Now with just 3 saves on the year, Josh Hader looked to put fantasy managers at ease with a scoreless 9th on Friday. The outing dropped his ERA just below 6. Yoan Duran locked down his 2nd save and looks to have no lingering effects from the injury that kept him out for the first month of the season. And lastly, Ryan Helsley recorded his 11th save with a perfect 9th. Helsley now leads the major leagues in saves. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Jason Foley blew his 1st save of the year, surrendering 2 runs and a walk-off to the Yankees in the bottom of the 9th. Foley hasn't had many slip-ups this year, but it's worth keeping an eye on with Alex Lang locking in. Raisel Iglesias pitched the 10th against the Dodgers with a 1-run lead, but blew his 1st save by allowing the zombie runner to score. The Dodgers would eventually win this one in 11. Evan Phillips pitched the 9th in that one as well while the game was still tied, and he was able to keep it that way. But if you'd like a breakdown of notable relief pitching performances from Friday, check out the Daily Reliever Ranks article over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break.
Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mow & Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner too. So she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now, he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor. Guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
And now we can look forward to Saturday, May 4th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. Our matchup of the day is Framber Valdez versus Logan Gilbert. We got two aces squaring off in an intra-division battle that should be fun to watch. In terms of probable starters, we've got six guys in our auto starts tier, including both Valdez and Gilbert. We've also got Jared Jones versus the Rockies, Kevin Gausman in Washington, Tyler Glasnow versus the Braves, and Pablo Lopez versus the Red Sox. Our probably starts tier is stacked with 14 guys, so you got plenty of streaming options. Our streamer of the day is Trevor Rogers in Oakland. Rogers has been going with the Blake Snell blueprint in recent starts, which gets me a little bit excited, and he'll have an easy matchup against the A's on Saturday. I'd also keep an eye out for Christian Scott in Tampa Bay. The Mets' number five prospect and one of the top pitching prospects in the game, Scott will be making his major league debut. We usually steer clear of those, but Scott is dominated at AAA, sports a lively and well-controlled four-seamer with a big sweeper, and gets a soft landing against a weak Rays offense, so I'm starting him in my 12-teamers. In terms of hitter suggestions, right-handed hitting Pirates batters should have a fun time versus Austin Gomber. Gomber has his moments, but the Pirates lineup could feast on him in Pittsburgh. Connor Joe, Edward Oliveira, and Andrew McCutchen are lefty mashers who may be available on your wire. I'd also keep an eye out for Reds hitters against John Means and his return from injury in Great American Small Park. Got a lot of factors there that lead to right-handed hitting Reds hitters having success on Saturday. Stuart Fairchild and Santiago Espinal have been decent options against southpaws in their careers and are sure to be in the lineup against Means today. And now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. Not much here. Jose Alvarado has pitched in three of the past 4 days, so Jeff Hoffman or Gregory Soto could see the ninth depending on matchups, but also we could see Alvarado again. And all other closers are well rested and will be available all weekend. So that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Join PL Pro to gain access to the Discord to interact with PitcherList staff and members of the community, as well as to utilize the in-season tools to help you win your leagues. That'll wrap up this edition of the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. Tune in tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.